the MMA Roadshow, episode number 207 and a half. My name is John Morgan. I am in London, England. Cole Coffee is not here with me, unfortunately, but Simon Head is. And we just put an event to rest with UFC on ESPN Plus 5. We got a little overtime tonight. I don't even know where to start, Simon. Do we start with Masvidal versus Till? Do we start with Masvidal versus Edwards? I guess it's all tied in together, but one of the more bizarre endings, I guess you would say, to a UFC fight night.
Yeah, it's kind of overtime, but not overtime because it curtailed the post-fight press conference by two-thirds.
Yeah.
We had no Leon Edwards, we had no Jorge Masvidal. Darren Till was unable to join us because of what Jorge Masvidal did to him during the fight. So we were left with Dave Shaw. And it was a crazy night. I think probably the best way to frame the evening is this week was the Jorge Masvidal show. Mm-hmm. From the minute he appeared at the York Hall in Bethnal Green, iconic boxing venue for any boxing aficionados out there, put on a great open workout session, an impromptu street self-defense tutorial, and fielded questions from the audience. Then he went on and had an absolutely superb media day. If you were grading him and thinking, how did he do during fight week? He ticked all the boxes. He did a great job during media day. Super quotable. Gave people real interest in his fight. Interest in him. And I think got people who maybe might not have been that excited about the fight much more interested in what was going to happen on Saturday night. And then, having done all of that, he gets in the cage and produces an absolutely stunning performance. We'll have to talk about the overall. I mean, there wasn't a huge amount in terms of time elapsed, but there was some absolute craziness during the fight, and one of the nastiest knockouts we've seen in quite some time. And at that point, you think he's played the week perfectly.
Top of the world.
There is literally nothing more the man can do other than come back and talk to us, give us some more real talk in the press conference, because that's what Jorge Masvidal is all about. Give us some more real talk. Tell us what he wants next. And then goes off on his merry way. But during an interview with Laura Sanko for ESPN, Leon Edwards had a few words to say from stage right, and Jorge Masvidal decided that he wasn't too happy about that. Went over, and then all hell broke loose.
Yeah, all hell did break loose. And, I think it's interesting because it was broadcast live, basically, so pretty much everybody saw it.
Yeah.
So there's not a whole lot to say that, you know, behind the scenes, what you didn't see. I mean, it all kind of played out on camera. I guess the one thing that we talked to a couple members of Masvidal's team, and what they said from their point of view was, you know, Masvidal walked over and had his hands behind his back. Leon lifted his hands like he was ready to go, and that's when Jorge decided, well, then I'm throwing punches. You know, you're not going to raise your hands to me. They framed it as self-defense. I don't know if that would stand up in a court of law. I don't know if somebody raising their hands to you is legal justification or not enough for you to go ahead and strike on them. But on the rules of the street, I can understand what he's saying. If a man raises his hand at you, don't wait to see what he does. You know what I mean? Act first. I mean, that kind of goes in with his impromptu street self-defense seminar that he gave earlier in the week. It's just don't sit there and be a target. You know, you got to do something.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an Englishman. I'm a British guy, and I've thankfully not been involved in too many altercations over the years. I'm a generally pretty well-behaved boy, but I've certainly seen a fair few. And this, what happened there, was definitely not what you normally get here in England. What you normally get, you have two people will front up, they'll shout some crap at each other, there'll be a bit of pushing and shoving, and then if it hasn't already been broken up by then maybe the fists will fly, but Jorge, from right first up. Glance, there was absolutely no messing around whatsoever, and I don't think you can justify it. I don't think you can justify it. I don't think you can. I think calling it self-defense is a stretch at best.
Yeah.
Because I didn't see Leon throw anything.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I don't know if the act of raising your hands as if you might strike is considered enough to be a threat. I understand why Jorge wants to react to it and gain the upper hand.
Yeah.
But listen, to say if it's legally, I don't think any charges or anything are going to come of this. I mean, it was broken up relatively quickly.
Security did a superb job because they were right there.
Security was right there. They got him separated. They went to the steps of not bringing him to the post fight press conference.
Yep.
From what we understand, Masvidal's team is now at a different hotel. You know, so they make sure there won't be any accidental run ins at breakfast tomorrow morning or anything along those lines. So everybody did what they should. And I guess Leon Edwards, if he wanted to, maybe could press charges, but I just can't imagine that he would do that. And I mean, I know it sounds kind of stupid, but in the MMA, look at what happened when Colby Covington wanted to file charges against Fabricio Verdun, right? Everybody was like, "Are you serious, you loser?" So I don't think Leon Edwards. Now there was some damage. He did get cut.
He got a nasty cut on his cheekbone.
Get a nasty cut. Fortunately, that's I'm sure the UFC took care of the sutures and that'll heal up nice and easy. So I don't think that's going to be the kind of lasting concern. If he knocked him out or something like that, then maybe you press charges or something because you're like, dude, you just gave me a concussion. But I can't see any charges coming from it. And I really don't think the UFC is going to do anything. Hell, if they didn't punish Conor McGregor for throwing a dolly through a bus window and actually injuring people and that sort of thing, I don't think they're going to do anything here.
It's interesting because Masvidal's performance in the cage earned him not one but two $50,000 post-fight bonuses. He got fight of the night for the fight with Darren Till, and he got performance of the night as well. Now, it wouldn't have been surprising if they'd have turned around and said, well, he's going to forfeit his bonuses for
right.
that. And that may yet still happen, for all we know. For all we know, the UFC may review what happened. I'm sure they will review what happened. And they may take the view that, we'll withhold these bonuses until we know exactly how all this went down. We'll take a considered view of what happened. And maybe we just won't give you those bonuses. But it's weird because I was talking to a media colleague of mine backstage. Paul Daly got thrown out of the UFC for sucker punching Josh Koscheck in the cage
right.
after the bell.
Right.
Some of the stuff we've seen since is on another level altogether. And now, I'm not saying you should throw Jorge Masvidal out of the UFC. I'm not saying you should throw Conor McGregor out of the UFC or Khabib the Magomedov. But I think at some point, and there does need to be a line drawn whereby this stuff, while fans love to see conflict, fans love to see trash talk, fans like to see aggravation and all that, because it's drama, it's a storyline, all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, they're getting in a cage and fighting.
Right.
I mean, that's as much as it should be. I think... if the fighting is outside of the cage, I think we have a problem, and I think stuff needs to be tightened up somehow, some way. I'm disappointed, if I'm honest. Masvidal had an incredible week. When the knockout happened, bear in mind we're in the UK, we're here in London. Darren Till is a British fighter.
Yeah.
And when Masvidal won by knockout in that spectacular fashion, everyone was super, super impressed. It was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then the conversation then moved on to what a week he's had.
Yeah.
What a week he's had. Talk about elevate yourself. He's been in the UFC for a long time. That was his 46th professional fight. This isn't like he's a prospect breaking through the glass ceiling and saying, here I am.
Right.
It's a guy who's been around the block a few times, right? So... But it seemed like this was a seminal week for him in terms of his career.
I feel like he
and it still
a
is.
Star. And it still
it
is.
It still is. And rightly or wrongly, what happened after is only gonna increase his notoriety further. It shouldn't in real terms, but given the way this sport works these days, it will. So I don't know what's gonna happen. Probably not a lot. And I asked Dave Shore, I got the mic back for extra questions during the press conference because I'm denied about asking. And I thought, no, I'm going to ask. And it was given what we've seen in the past before, and I was alluding to the Khabib-Conor situation.
Right.
The facility is there for people to basically deal with any business inside the cage.
Right.
Under regulation, with rules, you have a distinct winner and a distinct loser. And then things are dealt with. And I asked the question, is that going to be a consideration now? Because Edwards called for the winner of the main event.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I don't know what Edwards shouted over at Masvidal, but I'm sure it was Edwards letting it be known that he wants Masvidal next.
Right.
he got Masvidal much earlier than he was hoping for, right? But in terms of a fight in the octagon, that fight now makes sense, even more so now.
Yeah.
Does the UFC book it, or is it irresponsible to, having already done it once with Conor and Khabib, is it going to be irresponsible to go down a similar or lower level?
Yeah, no. See,
go down a similar path and almost exploit what was an unsavory incident in order to,
yeah,
to put
but,
a fight
but
on.
It is part of the story. I was never really that offended by people by the fact that the UFC used the footage in the build-up. That was part of the story. It's not good. And look, I'm not. I don't want to sit here and make it sound like I am so offended by Masvidal's disgusting behavior. But yeah. To your point, it is right. Like, this is not okay. It cannot happen because it will escalate, or worse things can and will happen if you allow incidents like this to occur.
He said it himself. Masvidal said to me during the media day, this trash talking, one day someone's going to get killed or badly hurt.
Right.
Because there are crazy people out there who would do some crazy shit. Masvidal just did some crazy shit. So, you know, he almost...
Proving himself correct.
Self-fulfilling prophecy. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
It wasn't massively extreme. It was a couple of punches.
Yep.
But for me, it was unnecessary. Obviously, it was unnecessary.
Sure.
He did everything right. And we should be walking away going, Jorge Masvidal has elevated himself now. And he's a guy people can get behind. He's had the best performance, arguably, of his UFC career, certainly.
Yeah.
He's in the mix. He's in the mix now. And despite the fact he had that incredible, brutal knockout of Darren Till, which that video should be trending. But it won't be that video that's trending. It'll be this behind-the-scenes video that's trending. And I think that's a shame for him.
Yeah.
I think that's a shame for him because from a sporting context... He's taken the shine off his own performance because people aren't talking about that now. They're talking about this.
So true. And I think that's why it sucks for him because he up to that point, man, he had killed everything this week, as you said. And it really did feel like even a guy that's been around this long, it was his coming out party. You know what I mean? It really was. So a damn shame. I'm okay with them booking Masvidal and Edwards if they want to do that. I don't know if Masvidal will think it makes sense. I mean, maybe now it makes sense because there's something really personal behind it and something frustrating behind it. So maybe it would make more sense to him now. I know he's thinking title shot, but, you know, we'll have to see how that all plays out. And one more win certainly wouldn't hurt to solidify his case. He hadn't fought in a while, and it's not like he was on some massive winning streak coming in or anything like that. So I would be okay with doing it. Well, let's talk about Darren Till, man. I thought Darren Till was fighting well, man. I mean, I think – Masvidal was a little bit of a slow start, no question about it. But I thought Till was doing well. The straights were landing. He was adding in the uppercuts as well. And I thought fighting good. I will say, I think Masvidal started to find his range a bit in the second. Till didn't seem to appreciate it or pick up on it. You know, it didn't seem like he made any adjustments. And then that left hand over the top was just brutal, man. And caught him with a second one landed on the way down. But, I mean, I think he was out from that first punch. And then when he hit the ground, Till's head bounced off the canvas pretty hard. And he was out for a bit. There was a couple minutes that he was out. So we have not heard word on him. I'm sure he'll be fine. But they've got him at the hospital for precautionary reasons.
Yeah.
Man, for Darren Till, where do you go from here, man? Because this is tough, man. A guy that, you know, admitted how much that last loss to Tyron Woodley resonated with him on a daily basis, you know, and how it fueled him to become better, and it was still driven to be the best in the world. And now you get your lights turned out, two consecutive losses, big step back for Darren Till.
Yeah, it was one of the craziest starts to a fight that I've seen in quite a while.
Bizarre.
One of the craziest starts.
Oh, my God.
I mean, we always thought, this is going to be interesting to see how the start of this fight goes. Jorge Masvidal came flying out, literally flying out of his corner, flew through the air, and planted a flying kick squarely in the plums of Darren Till, who went down like a sack of potatoes, as you would. And I was half looking at the screen. I was actually walking around a desk to get a good vantage point to watch it, And I thought, oh, did he not catch the inside of his leg and it ride up and hit him? No. No.
Just stomped directly in the
groin. Do not pass go. Bang, straight in. And down he went. And I thought, crikey, okay. And we kind of joked, tactically, that's not a terrible move at the start of a fight. Because no fighter that gets whacked in the plums at the very start of a fight is going to want to just quit at that point.
Right.
Right? So bravado and possibly the desire to get their own back means that they're coming back into this fight. But you whack someone hard enough in the nuts, you know, they're compromised for a little while.
Sure.
So we kind of had a bit of a joke about that. But so Till recovered sufficiently to continue. And with his very first punch of the fight, no range finder, nothing. Bang. Straight left, down the pipe.
Yep.
Masvidal goes down. So we've had two strikes, one to the nuts. Down he goes. Guy gets up, straight left, bang. Down goes Masvidal. This fight's insane already. And Till wasn't able to capitalize on that. I think he was wary, and probably rightly so, of Masvidal on the ground.
Definitely.
And I think he didn't want to put himself in too much danger down here, which was probably a smart move. They had a bit of an exchange down there on the ground, had a bit of a scramble. But in the end, it got back up to the feet. And rather than really put the pressure on again, Till kind of backed off a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And something I commented on to Abby was, watching the way Till fights, and I've seen it a couple of times, actually, his right hand, it's almost not a punching hand.
It's true.
Right? He's got a lot of power with the left hand. And he almost uses the right to sort of open the door for the left.
Mm-hmm.
He's just range finding with the right. You don't see a lot of power strikes with the right until he's got the guy hurt, and then he sort of squares up and starts unloading. But when he's in his usual fighting stance, he's very wide, very broad striking base, and he's just basically range finding with the right. And once he's got his range, he knows that he's connected solidly enough with the knuckles, then comes the left. And because of that, Masvidal was able to start to time him, and it took him about a round to get it right. And then in the second round, Masvidal started to touch him a bit. And I liken it to when, like, Nick Diaz throws punches. He doesn't throw full power with every punch. He just gets his range. He connects with punches. And it's little and often.
Right.
And then every now and again, he'll mix it up with a big one. And because you don't see the difference, they're the ones that hurt. And I think that's what happened here. Masvidal was touching Till. He was countering him brilliantly, like crisp 1-2 punch. He'd be pow pow. If the first one landed, the second one landed.
Right.
And
Till was respecting it.
And Till was just sort of shaking his head and saying, nah, didn't hurt me. Because they didn't.
Right.
But then there was Masvidal in doing that. He did it about two or three times.
Mm-hmm.
He'd got his range. He'd sorted out Till's timing. And then he uncorked a big one. And I think it's partly shock, but obviously a complete difference in power. Till, I think, was out from the first punch, as you say. Hit him with another one on the way down. It was quite sickening, really, to see just how high Darren Till's head bounced off the canvas. Bounced sort of a good foot off the canvas. And then he dived in and got another one, and Mark Goddard sort of dived in there and managed to spare him from any more. But nasty knockout. And honestly, Leon Edwards isn't going to like this, but I think Darren Till, Leon Edwards, isn't a terrible match to make next. Because I don't think Darren Till is going to absolutely crash through the floor in terms of the rankings. He's going to drop down a bit, obviously, because Masvidal's on the up. Edwards, I don't think, is going to go up much because he was fighting a guy who's ranked below him, I think, Gunnar Nelson. So I think what we saw tonight was Till and Edwards actually get closer together in the rankings. And I think that fight, which a lot of people thought was something that Edwards was going to call for at the end of the night because people thought Till was going to win, I think there's an argument that fight may well happen.
That's interesting. You know, I think Leon, you're right, would be disappointed with that booking. He wants to go a little higher up the rankings. But, you know, maybe a headliner on a show in
Birmingham?
Europe. Yeah.
Do it in Birmingham. I mean, Leon wants a... He wants to bring the UFC back to Birmingham. It's been a long time since they've been there. A quick note on Leon. I know we haven't really spoken about Leon's performance. Booed in his own country.
I know.
Amazing.
That was crazy. Look, I don't know if – I couldn't tell if just all of Iceland was in the building.
It sounded like
or
it.
Or what, because, yes, the boos came out for Leon Edwards. Gunnar Nelson got cheered loudly, and then you had the chants going on, you know.
The Viking clap, the skull clap.
Yeah, man. I felt so bad for Leon Edwards. I was like, how – no respect. We said going in, I perennially undervalue him. And listen, I was impressed. You're right. He's not going to take a big move up the rankings because of the opponent. But knowing, you know, how much I think we all respect Gunnar Nelson as a fighter and a martial artist, I thought that, you know, getting a convincing win over him the way Leon did, and especially the way he did it, you know, I mean, he stuffed Gunnar's grappling game. And, you know, he said, hey, don't be surprised when I submit him. Now, he didn't get that far, but I think he showed that, hey, I'm cool grappling with Gunnar Nelson. That's not a problem.
Yeah, and it was I don't understand how one judge scored it for Gunnar Nelson.
It was
rendered a split decision.
And it was read as a split with Gunnar's score as the first score, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which Bruce mixes it up a little bit. It's not always 1 and 3, you know, but when it's the first score, you're like, oh,
really?
What?
Yeah. I mean, there were some gasps in the media room when they heard that. Are you sure? Is this a? You know, sometimes you get the score and it's read out as this a split decision, and then subsequently the scorecards were written down incorrectly,
right.
You know, there was some confusion, and it was actually a unanimous decision. But yeah, no, that was very confusing. But the thing with Leon is, you know, there isn't a lot to be offended by with Leon Edwards. You know, he isn't a trash talker. He is attempting to try and make a little bit of noise for himself, but he's not. He is a respectful guy. He's not somebody who'll go out and say terrible things about your mum. Or start hurling expletives in your face, or anything like that.
It is funny because
that's not what he's like.
It
he's
is
a nice
funny
guy.
Because you talked to him ahead. You talked to him at media day in the interview, because I ended up writing the piece on it, but it was your interview where Leon actually said, "It's like in this day and age, man. It's like if you're not talking trash, then nobody pays attention to you." You know, I mean, it's so funny. So between Masvidal saying the trash talk is corny and it's got to get over, and Leon saying, "Oh, I wish the sport wasn't about trash talking," and then those two guys get an altercation backstage.
It's just the grandest of irony, isn't it? But I mean, if you look at British UFC fighters over recent years, Leon Edwards is definitely the most improved. You know, if you look at his body of work, every time you see him, he looks better in one area or another. Mm-hmm. And his ground game has come along leaps and bounds. We talked about it on the earlier show this week. When he came into the UFC, he was predominantly a striker. Now he's a legit, well-rounded mixed martial artist, and he showed that. And it was a good performance, a good win. And it's funny because we were saying in the media room, it's like, well, Who are they gonna match him with? Because he doesn't have that massive larger than life personality. He's ranked at a sort of level where the guys above him are gonna look at him and say, "What do I get from fighting this guy?"
Right.
So he's sort of caught between a rock and a hard place. And possibly, I'm sure he probably doesn't feel it right now. Possibly, what happened with him getting clocked by Jorge Masvidal after the event, that might turn out to be one of the best things to happen to him in terms of his stock and his saleability, and because there is a fight there that you can book, and with Till losing, that's another fight you can book. That's the only other fight that makes sense for me.
Yeah, because you know,
because
what, man,
they've had a bit of back and forth in the past already. So
I think because when I think about it, I think I'd much rather see Jorge Masvidal versus Leon Edwards than I would Jorge versus Ben Askren, which was kind of the thought coming in, right? Like Ben was going to get the winner.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm down for that fight. I mean, Ben's great, man. Ben had a great week too. You know what I mean? He was coming around, making the rounds, doing the Q&A and having some boom roasted with the fans there. And I mean, he was just on fire. So I mean, look, Ben Askren's stock was high this week too. But I think in terms of just stylistically the matchup and then what is involved in it, I know we're saying that this altercation isn't a good thing, and it's not. But it is part of the story. Like, I think I'd rather see Masvidal and Edwards than I would Masvidal and Askren. There's a ton of fights for Ben Askren.
Yeah, I mean, Ben Askren you could put in there with just about anybody. He's at that stage right now where it almost doesn't matter who you put him in with. People are going to watch that because there are people who are very excited to see this guy in the UFC because they're aware of his career and they've watched him and they want to see him test himself. And then there's the other camp who are, this guy deserves to get a a shoo-in from somebody, I can't wait to watch it. So either it doesn't matter. Like, the worst thing you could be towards a fighter is ambivalent.
That's right.
And with Leon Edwards, a lot of people were ambivalent. And I think now we're getting to a stage where, through his performances, through his improvement, and through the fact that he's now found himself unwittingly caught up in some controversy, or maybe not unwittingly, because he instigated it by shouting. Let's be honest about it. But it escalated pretty quick. But through that, he's now a name that people are going to know a little bit more. Right, you know, rightly or wrongly, but his performances in the octagon have been very, very good. And you know, you look at the names he's beaten, and you know, Gunnar Nelson, massively respected grappler, someone who's always been in and around that top 10, top 15. Donald Cowboy Cerrone, everybody loves Donald Cowboy Cerrone and what he brings to the cage. Peter Sabota's a respected European grappler. Brian Barberina doesn't get finished easy. He gives everybody a tough fight. You know, you go down, Liu Kei, he's on the up as well. You know, he's having a good run. Tumenov, these guys are all legit, and Edwards has beaten them all. But it needs, he now needs a big, he needs a big fight, like a really big fight.
Yep.
And for me, well, Masvidal writes, you know, the story writes itself.
Yeah.
That's the one I'd probably book.
I dig it. All right. Dominic Reyes picked up a split decision win over Volkan Oezdemir. Hotly contested split decision. Dominic Reyes, I don't necessarily think he looked bad tonight, but I think Volkan looked pretty good, you know, and was able to counter him very well. The crowd did not like this result. Volkan definitely didn't like the result. He came back and talked to you guys about it. I will say it was close. I wasn't scoring round by round. Steven Morocco was doing that for us. And our play-by-play, he actually gave the fight to Dominic Reyes. So,
okay.
But he did say, even in his notes, he said, I'm scoring at 29-28, giving Reyes rounds 2 and 3, but definitely would not be surprised to see it go the other way. You know, so it was really, really close. As I was casually watching, I was recapping the fight, so it's like I wasn't watching it, but I wasn't watching it necessarily with score in mind. I kind of thought Volkan had done enough to win the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, tough result for Volkan, man. Another guy that was stock was up high. Now, I don't know that it drops hugely after this because the fight was so close, but, you know, an L is an L, you know, no matter what. It may have an asterisk next to it, but it's still a loss. Meanwhile, Dominic Reyes does stay undefeated, but I don't think necessarily, you know, the way, like, Johnny Walker has exploded out of nowhere, and people are going, maybe he's the guy to beat John Jones. Even though Dominic Reyes is literally saying, I'm going to be the man to beat John Jones, I don't know if this was the type of performance where people go, oh, God, I got to see that fight.
No. And this might come as a little bit of a surprise, but Volkan Oezdemir is now 3-3 in the UFC. Mm. 3 wins in a row, OSP, Serkanov, and Manoa, and then he lost to Cormier Smith and now Dominic Reyes. I mean, the feeling in the media room was...
It's like he was just on top of the world. It was no time flat.
No time. He's got no time for the judges after tonight, I'll tell you that much. But he came backstage, like the UFC PR staff came over and said, we've got no Dominic Reyes, he's been transported. Volkan has said he would be happy to come back and talk if you'd like him to come back. We're like, yes, please,
like
let's
it.
Talk to him. So I wondered, okay, he's going to come back, he's going to be spitting fire. This would be interesting because he's never done that before.
Right.
And he came back and he was remarkably calm and composed, incredibly polite, clearly pissed off. but very articulated, very articulately, more than me, explained...
It is 4 o'clock in the morning, you're excused.
Explained himself and, I mean... Respect to him for doing that. He didn't need to do that. I think a lot of the people in the media room, I didn't get to see the first two rounds.
Right.
So I wasn't... When I looked at the third round, I thought Reyes was clearly winning the
Definitely.
Third round.
Yeah, no question
it
about
looked
that.
Like Oezdemir had slowed down. And actually, we bumped into him in the host hotel and he came over to us and said he should have pushed more in the last round. And he was adamant that he won the first round. He thought the second round was closer, but he still felt that he did more than enough to win it.
Yep.
We even pulled up MMA decisions and looked at how everybody was scoring the fight.
About two-thirds of people had it for him, but there were some people that had it for Reyes.
And the other thing we saw, obviously, was the three scorecards.
All different.
All completely different.
That's right.
So, I mean, you know, scores all over the place. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Ozdemir next. It was suggested during the scrum, you know, maybe he'd like to fight in Sweden. Jimmy Manuel would like to fight in Sweden. Perhaps a rematch makes sense for the pair of them. Ozdemir seemed down for that. Manuel would take a rematch at the drop of a hat because right. that's what Jimmy's like. If someone beats him, you can bet he'll want to get back in there and make amends for that. That makes a lot of sense right now, given what's happened with Volkan right now. So maybe we'll see. Maybe we'll see that rerun. And obviously with Alex Gustafsson and Anthony Smith on that card as well, that'd be a nice little light heavyweight showcase you could put at the top of that card. So
good suggestion.
So that's an interesting one. But yeah, no, I've got a load of respect for Volkan for the way he dealt with that. He was clearly annoyed. But he came. I think the first thing he said is, you know, I want to be classy. I don't want to be bitching about this.
That's right.
I'm not happy with what happened. And he actually said that Reyes's team had gone over and basically congratulated him on his win before the decision was announced. And then obviously Reyes's hand got raised, and it was like, oh, okay.
Never mind.
So you know, take the win and gallop off to the sunset.
That's crazy.
But yeah. Yeah, and you know, the Simon Head jinx strikes again. I said that fight, there's no way that fight's going to a decision. Of all the fights on the card, that is a nailed-on knockout finish for someone. Of course it goes to the judges.
Not so much. All right, one that didn't go to the judges, Nathaniel Wood picked up a submission over Jose Quinones. Second round rear naked choke, and man, I thought Wood looked good, man. If you didn't believe before, I think you should believe now, man. I think this kid is a real prospect, man. I was excited about what I saw. You know, definitely, I mean, Jose's a scrappy kid, but Nathaniel's just a cut above, man. I think he's top talent.
Yeah, he's not a prospect, John. He's the prospect.
The prospect.
He's the prospect.
It's in his name.
The clue is in the name. And it's kind of funny because he worked his way up the regional scene and won the Cage Warriors bantamweight title largely by knocking people out. You know, he's known as a knockout guy,
right.
You know, a striker. And he's come to the UFC and he's reeled off three straight submissions. So, you know, hugely impressive performance. He seems to be getting better with every display. And the thing I like about him is he's ambitious, but he's not cocky. He's not getting
right.
he's not getting ahead of himself.
Yeah.
He knows there's a process you have to go through. And I think, other than that being his own character, I think the fact that he's got someone like Brad Pickett in his corner, who has been there and done it all, over the course of his career, I think he's got the perfect mentor right there. And yeah, super, super impressed with how he performed, because sometimes when you perform in your hometown and you know you get that fight that you've always wanted. He said in the press conference he's been dreaming of fighting in the O2 in the Octagon, and this was the night that he was doing it. And he had his friends and family were all in the crowd, you know, he had his mentor who he'd watched.
Yeah.
When he went and watched UFC, now he's in his corner, and he had all of that. And sometimes you can freeze in those situations.
Yes, you can.
You know, the enormity of it. Wow, everything I dreamed of is happening to me right now.
True.
And then you just sort of clam up, and you know you can't perform. He performed. He did really well. And you know, I think the sky's the limit for him. I think
how good is 135 right now?
That's the most interesting division.
Oh,
well, I'll say the most interesting. 205 is looking pretty interesting right now as well.
Yeah,
170 is pretty interesting right now.
135 is strong.
I think 35 might be the most exciting division.
We just got to get TJ Dillashaw figured out, you know, what we're going to do, because there's some great fights at 135 right now.
Yeah, I think we need to get the title back into circulation again and just get that ball rolling, because there's so much going on in that, you know. Petey Yan's moving up, you know.
Yeah.
Petey Yan versus anybody is an exciting fight. Nathaniel Wood versus, I think he wants someone 10 to 15 next.
Right.
That makes total sense for him. You know, you've got John Lineker knocking around still. You know, it's such an exciting division. And it's great from a personal point of view to see a good up-and-coming British fighter who... He hasn't come in on a surge of hype, I don't think. He's come in with legit credentials. And he's doing things the right way, and I was really, really, really pleased to see how he performed on the big stage.
Phenomenal guy, looks like he's the real deal. All right, Claudio Silva picked up a verbal submission win over Danny Roberts, and I gotta say, I mean, it sucks for a number of reasons, because I thought the fight was fun. It was crazy, man. It was back and forth. You know, you had a clash of styles to be sure. I mean, Danny Roberts was touching him up on the feet, but Claudio was just like falling into takedowns and trying everything he could for submissions. I mean, dude, he looked exhausted to me after the first round. I thought Claudio Silva was done. He came back to his corner and just looked exhausted, but he kept going, he kept grinding, he kept pushing, and then he gets this armbar, and it was definitely locked in deep. Now, I will say it was on the other side of the cage as me from where I was sitting, but I did not hear a scream. And I had somebody reach out to me. I didn't hear the broadcast. I don't know if you guys could hear the broadcast or not, but apparently during the broadcast they were kind of saying that a yell isn't a verbal submission, but it is. I mean, it absolutely is.
We had that conversation in the back.
Yeah, if you scream out loud, it is absolutely a verbal submission because, you know, you're screaming in pain. The referee's there to protect you. But I didn't hear a scream, and I asked his team, like, as he walked by. I mean, Danny was obviously very, very frustrated, so I let him pass first. But then I asked his team, like, did he scream? And they're like, no, he said he grunted twice. Yeah. I didn't hear it. So I just, oh, man, I thought the ending was premature. And I don't want to slam the referee. I believe it was Kevin Sataki was the referee on that one. I understand it was a bad looking armbar, and he's trying to do the best he can, and he was staying in position. I just think he made a mistake here. Mistakes happen. That doesn't mean I'm not criticizing the guy or saying he's not good at what he does or what have you, but I just feel like there was an error in judgment here, and I feel bad for Danny Roberts.
Yeah, and you know, you could tell from like the post fight interview that he was angry, he was emotional, and I think everybody watching it could sympathize because it looked like he'd kind of half extricated himself from the position when the fight was actually broken up. So, yeah, it was one of those. I mean, like when it happened, and you know what it's like backstage. Some, you know, you're sort of half looking at, you know, dealing with a potential interview that's coming in,
right.
Or you run back to your desk to turn some video around or whatever. Or you're swapping memory cards or whatever it is, and then you look up at the telly, and all of a sudden, what looks like is a submission, but then he escapes the submission, and the next thing you know, the ref's in there, and you think, okay, well, what did he do? Did he pull his shorts to break the submission?
Right.
Is he going to reset? What's going on here? And someone shouted out, "No, Roberts has won." I don't know why. Was there a weird sort of tap that I didn't see, or and then it transpired? No, it wasn't. It was a verbal submission and Roberts lost. It was confusion all over the place,
right.
And media room was a bit of a mess tonight. We didn't have enough screens.
Right.
Half 90% of the people working in the media room couldn't see a TV while they were working. So it was tricky. Like eventually we got one towards the end, but it wasn't easy. We were having to run away to the other bits of the room to actually see what was going on. So keeping up with some of the fights was tricky,
right?
And I'll mention that with a fight later on, but yeah, it was unfortunate. And Claudio Silva, credit to him, you know, he's got the win that he wanted. You know, he's a local boy, living just over the way from the O2 Arena.
Right.
You know, we touched on that again in his interview tonight, and you know, he's very excited to be back in the mix, and he wants to fight five times in a year.
Yeah.
So he wants to make up for lost time, and you know, he's going to be a tricky out for anybody because of his style. You know, he's very, very tricky on the mat. Danny Roberts, you know, he seems to get into these crazy fights where crazy stuff happens. And this is another one, but this you know, this one sort of went away from him, and you know, it's a shame. When mistakes happen. People make mistakes when they fight. Referees can sometimes make mistakes. Everybody's human. It's a human sport.
That's it.
It's just a shame.
It's just a shame that when the referee makes a mistake, what it ends up costing. You know, because it's half your money for one.
Yep.
You know, with the win bonus. I mean, he could have lost anyway. But just to say, if you feel it's taken away from you, not to mention just the position in the. You know, normally when you win, your salary goes up a little bit in your next fight. You know, so miss out on that, so there's a little bit of money there. Not to mention, you know, as you said, as people are making their way up, you know, you got to put wins together to move up the rankings and get the bigger fight. So
Dana wasn't happy, was he?
Dana was not happy. He took to social media and ripped the referee. He's a little less understanding of human error than we are, but he was not happy. But feel for Danny Roberts. I mean, much respect to Claudio Silva because he fought his ass off. He didn't do anything wrong. He did what he was supposed to do, you know?
No.
You just feel for Danny Roberts. All right, another guy that might have potentially made a little mistake. John Phillips suffering a split decision loss to Jack Marshman. Now, a couple of ways to go on this, because first of all, the crowd hated this decision as well, man. And they were not satisfied with the way it went down. But, man, you got to think John Phillips, dude. He floored Marshman early on. And, you know, yeah, didn't want to go down. And I understand, man. He's a striker. That's what he wants to do. He wants to strike. But, yeah, floored him, didn't jump on top to finish. Instead, backed away, waved him up, took a quick little bow to him, and then ends up losing the fight via decision. Bummer there, man. It was a close fight. And I think, too, similar to kind of what we were talking about with Till as well, like Phillips definitely, you know, was won the first round. But then, you know, Marshman, even though he was retreating, even though he was moving, he was starting to find success with his counters. And I think he was, you know, obviously getting points on the judges' cards with the work he was doing. And I just don't think Phillips respected it enough to realize, like, I got to do something here.
Yeah, I mean, the feeling in the media room was that Marshman had done enough. He was working a little more. He was, you know, the shots might not have been as impactful, but there, you know, there were more of them, and they were still finding their mark. You know, and I think, you know, Marshman had told us in the lead up that he was going to try and mix things up, and I think he did to some degree. He didn't get drawn into a toe-to-toe slugfest, which I think was probably a very shrewd move, because Phillips has got some pretty serious punching power. And by fighting off the back foot, he was making Phillips kind of chase him around a bit, and he was always right on the very, very end of the punches when Phillips was connecting, so he wasn't always landing with too much impact, you know. He was sort of really leaning in to try and get to his body and barely reaching at the point. So, yeah, I mean, I think it was because Phillips had got that knockdown and the crowd would think, right, okay, he's going to go in and finish this. So, and Marshman never really had that. He was fighting a much more tactical fight that he got the win. So, and, you know, Marshman, he could have found himself in a little bit of trouble career-wise after that fight, because he explained to us backstage, you know, he's heading into the fight, he's an active paratrooper in the army, and he's actually decided he's leaving the army. He's basically handed in his notice or whatever, and he's leaving the army. But having done that, having handed in the notice, he knows when he's leaving, to then lose today, that he might have found himself cut by the UFC, so he'd end up without the job that he wanted, and he'd lost his previous job. He'd have found himself in a whole load of trouble. And it sounds as if he may have taken this fight against the army's wishes as well.
Yeah, crazy.
Hilarious moment backstage. Like, we thought, oh, he must have sorted it all out, you know, because I think it was Niall McGrath said, so the army said on Thursday that you weren't allowed to fight. Is that right? And he's like, yeah. He goes, well, what changed between Thursday and Saturday? You know, what? And Jack just sort of grinned and went, we'll find out when I go back to work on Monday. Because I think he just basically said, sod it, I'm going to fight anyway. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Jack Marshman next. You know, he really does need to try and get another win. I suspect they'll keep him on the European cards and give him that sort of level of opposition. Phillips really needs a win from somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, that's a couple in a row now that I think he's lost. So, you know, he's desperate for a win, and Marshman, we thought might have been the ideal dance partner for him, and it didn't go his way. So, you know, tough break for him.
That was a tough break there. All right, that was the main card, the prelims. Arnold Allen picked up a unanimous decision win over Jordan Rinaldi. I thought Arnold Allen looked really good as well.
He did. Yeah.
I thought he looked fantastic tonight. You know, he was measured, I think was the word I used to describe it in my fight recap. I thought it was, you know, a very tactical fight. But then, even in being measured and tactical, then at the end of rounds, he would kind of let it all go and just and kind of go a little bit crazy. But, yeah, convincing win over Jordan Rinaldi. I mean, Arnold Allen is another kid that I thought looked just phenomenal tonight.
He's got huge potential, and it feels like we've been talking about him as a guy with huge potential for ages, but he's still incredibly young in the game. He's still only 25 years of age. And
crazy.
You know, he went in there with Jordan Rinaldi, who I thought was going to really push him and give him a strong test, because he's solid, Jordan Rinaldi. You know, he's got everything down. He's a strong wrestling base. You know, I thought he would be really a really interesting test. And Allen coped with him really well. And speaking to him backstage, you know, we sort of joked that the last couple of fights, he's had to kind of pull his spuds out the fire once or twice, you know, because he's found himself in trouble at points and had to come back through adversity and get the win. Not really so this week. He bossed it from start to finish, really. He dictated the pace. He did what he needed to do in there, and he came in and told us he was actually really pleased that he didn't go gung-ho and, you know, have any rushes of blood to the head and do any stupid stuff, which he says he's done in almost every other fight he's had. And he, I think he was quite proud of himself for actually sticking to the plan. And you know,
let it go in like the last 10 seconds. Like,
that was fine.
For the final 10 seconds, do whatever you want to do.
Yeah, yeah. But I think he was pretty pleased with himself, as much for the way he performed as for the win itself. So, you know, the only way is up for him. I think it's probably time for give him the next tier of opposition now and see how he goes.
Yeah. Another guy that looked good, Mark Diakese, picking up that much-needed win over Joe Duffy. Maybe it was. He needed to be back here and be comfortable, because I thought, and I don't want to take away from Mark, because I thought Mark looked good, and I just feel like Joe never really got going. And I don't want to just say Joe had an off night, but it just didn't seem like he got any rhythm going. But Mark Diakese shut him down, man. He showed some wrestling chops, and obviously his striking is always on point. And he did give us one, you know, super creative moment in there as well with the you know, athletic kicks that he has. But man, a big win, and it was, I mean, dude, the emotion that came pouring out when he won, pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, by the time he got back to us, he was in his usual sort of happy, jovial mood. He wasn't, you know, we didn't get any tears. We wondered whether we'd get some sort of weeping joy when he came. But no, he was laughing and joking and taking the mickey out of various members of the media. I said to him something along the lines of, look, I'm not asking to sort of badmouth your previous team that you were training with, but is it a fact that they were trying to turn you into what you would describe as perhaps a more stereotypical mixed martial artist, when the thing that you do best is some of the crazy wild stuff that, you know, we saw a bit more of that again today? And he just sort of looked at me and almost wagged his finger at me and says, you journalists ask tricky questions. I asked him another one, just, you know, have you got your mojo back now? And
right.
He was like, yeah. You know, I think he's where he wants to be. He's got his family close. He's training with a good team. I think I mentioned on a previous show, he had Daz Morris, Michael Bisping's old Muay Thai coach, working the pads for him during this camp. I think Darren Morris, I think, may well have been there, as he was his old coach at AST. ASW. And he's got such an upside. But I think the thing that makes Martin Diakese interesting and fun was kind of lost when he went over and trained over in the States. We saw a little bit more, you know, the old Mark Diakese was back, and Duffy did look a little bit off the pace. And I don't know whether it's because Diakese was just giving him different looks that he wasn't quite able to time and pick up on, or whether he just wasn't quite at the races. But not to take away from Diakese's performance, he needed that. Not just from a career standpoint, but I think he needed it from a personal mental standpoint. And that I think, you know, for both reasons, that's why he was such an emotional wreck after he won.
That's it. And you know, listen, some places just aren't a good fit for people. You know, sometimes it's not. Of course, ATT is a wonderful training facility with incredible, you know, athletes there. But sometimes it's just a better place fits different, and that shows in your performance. So nothing there. All right, Saparbek Safarov picked up a decision win over Nikolai Negamaranu. I messed it up today. Dan Hardy messed it up at the weigh-ins the other day. That was pretty funny when he caught himself. He's like, sorry. But Nikolai, I thought, looked like somebody that has something, you know, and he was, I think he was fighting up a weight class in this fight. But Safarov was able to grind out the decision win. There was a point deduction there along the way, but Safarov got the victory and then had, the worst post-fight interview you've ever had?
I've had some duffers over the years in terms of interviews where I've asked the wrong question, or I've done something, or I've just not. I had a terrible interview with Ilir Latifi once, where I think I just got him at a bad time, or my questions were just terrible, or both, and it was just awful. It was probably my fault. So it was one of those. This one was interesting because one of the UFC PR staff came back and says, right, Safarov doesn't have any English, but he has a guy with him who can kind of translate. Do you want us to bring him in? And we're like, well, yeah, let's go and let's give it a go. And you know, if anybody else doesn't want to interview him, then that's fine. Well, you know, I'll give it my best shot. Now, bearing in mind, I hadn't seen a second of this fight. Not 1 second of this fight. Because of all the chaos and carnage and everything else we were dealing with, and a quarter of an hour long Ben Askren scrum that we were dealing with, I had not seen a second of this fight. All I knew was that he was holding the cage multiple times.
That's it.
And obviously, I also knew about what had happened going into the fight. I knew it was a short notice opponent change. I know there was some argy-bargy at the weigh-ins. So I was like, okay, let's give this a go. This is going to be a three and out. Three questions and we're done. And not only was I having to deal with this translator, I couldn't hear the translator. So I was asking these questions. I had no idea what the answers were. I was interviewing about a fight I hadn't seen. So yeah, check that out on the YouTube page and listen to a completely clueless man talk to a translator who he can't hear about a fight he didn't see.
That's fantastic. The things we do.
But you just have to kind of wing it in those situations. And the other thing was, there were other people standing around me. Did they ask any questions? No.
They just left you out to dry.
Sai's got this.
Oh, that's brutal. All right, Dan Ige picked up a submission win over Danny Henry. Dan Ige looked phenomenal, man. Dan Ige comes in, dominates this fight in 77 seconds, gets on the mic and gives a classy post-fight speech. You know, heart goes out to the victims, and we need to stop this. Everybody in the world, race, creed, color, come on, man. Let's get all on the same page. And then on his way out, stopped by me at press row. I was like, hey, I just want to wish you a happy birthday, John. I mean, this dude, what can you say? Flawless performance.
Yeah, and he came back and gave a really, really cool interview as well. He's just a classy, classy individual, you know. He wants to be a success of himself as a mixed martial artist. But as I'm sure many Roadshow listeners know, because, you know, we're talking to hardcore fans right now, he's also a fight manager.
That's right.
He works for Dominance Fight Management alongside Ali Abdelaziz.
That's right.
Yeah, I said, okay, then what would Dan Ige, the fight manager, what advice would he give to Dan Ige, the fighter? You know, what are you going to do with him next?
Yeah.
And he's like, stay active, keep fighting, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I said, you know, is he the call-out type, or is he the give me anyone the UFC wants type?
Well, my client, Dan Ige.
Yeah, no, it was kind of like that. So you know, it was a fun little, you know, part to the interview, but really classy guy. And, you know, I think it was especially sort of sweet for him. He was coming in against a guy who in his last appearance had claimed a very quick submission victory of his own.
Mm-hmm.
That was back here in London against Hakeem
Duwadu. Yep.
Like 35, 36 seconds, I think it was. And Ige finished him in 77 seconds? Something like that. 77 seconds, I think it was. And hugely, hugely impressive performance. Massive size difference. It was like David versus Goliath in there.
Yeah.
And you know, following the narrative, David wins. So, yeah, it was a good performance. Classy guy. And I'm excited to see where he goes next.
Yeah, ended up pocketing 50 G's, by the way, for that as well. So, as you said earlier, Masvidal did get the double bonus, so he got the 100 grand. Obviously, Till got 50 as well for that fight of the night, but Ige got a performance of the night as well. Molly McCann, the decision win over Priscilla Cachoeira. Scrappy little fight here between these two men. They went at it early on the night, man. It really brought the crowd to life for sure. And hard-fought victory. Molly, we saw her at the host hotel tonight. We were going over there to try to get a hold of Masvidal or anybody else that we could that would talk about what happened. Unfortunately, we struck out, but we did see Molly there, and her right eye was completely closed. Her left eye, excuse me, was completely closed. She said she broke her orbital in the third round. She's got surgery set up in the morning. She actually said, and I don't know, we can't confirm this or not, but she said, I broke her arm with that arm bar.
Yeah.
I don't know if she did or not. I think she might have just been saying, I hurt her. But she was basically praising Cachoeira for being as tough as she was. And obviously we know how tough Cachoeira is. Unfortunately, it's been in losing efforts. But but she is tough. But Molly McCann, even though her eye was completely shut, she was on top of the world, man, enjoying it, and you know, just talking about how hard she worked for it and just how much the whole moment meant to her.
Yeah, now Molly gets very emotional around her fights. you know, whether it's the weigh-in, just watch her at the weigh-in. She's she's on the verge of tears at the weigh-in, and you know, she gets like that on the walk, and she fights on passion and fire, and you know, she's so proud. You know, she's proud of where she comes from, and she's proud to get in there and represent the city of Liverpool, and to, you know, she's got, like, even just in the hotel bar. She must have had at least 25
at least.
Friends, family, whoever else, you know, people from down the road, whoever it was. She had a huge entourage of people around her, and they were all there for her. I think Paddy Pimblett was there.
Yeah.
There's a real sense of community around the Liverpool fight scene. Whenever one of those guys fights, everybody mucks in, and it's really brilliant to see. And Molly lost her first fight in the UFC and was absolutely crestfallen because it was in her hometown. And she was beyond gutted. And I remember when she walked past, her, she was in absolute floods of tears and all the rest of it. This time, she was over the moon. Like, as soon as she saw us when she was in the fight, she came bounding over, you know, wanted to take a picture, so you can see my eye and all this. And but yeah, I mean, that was a scrappy fight. There was a bit of needle in there every now and again, you know. I think towards there was a glove touch that Cachoeira turned into a Muay Thai clinch,
that was naughty.
Rich Mitchell, the ref, I thought dealt with that very, very well.
Yeah, she seemed, because yeah, he basically called time out on it.
Yeah, he stopped it and gave her a telling off.
And she it looked like she apologized right away. She doesn't speak English, so I don't know what she was able to say, but you know, I think she was. I mean, she was making motions as she was apologizing. She was trying to explain that, like, I think she just got caught up in the heat of the moment. But that was a bad moment. And Molly actually ended the fight by flipping her off and running away and jumping on the cage. So it was a hell of a fight, though. And Molly, as you said, man, she's an emotional person, and she even said tonight, you know, she's like, man, the demons that you have to fight, man, in this game, it's hard.
Yeah, and shout out to Simon Simano. The first line of the report was something like, Molly McCann is known to her fans as Meatball, and by the end of her fight with Priscilla Cachoeira, that's exactly what her left eye looked like.
So did, man.
Because it was huge. It was a bad night for swollen faces, because Claudio Silva came in looking like the Elephant Man when he came in to do the post-fight interview. I mean, we saw him in the fight hotel,
like,
as well.
You guys like, hey, the swelling is going down. Looking good, buddy.
He turned around. He still looked terrible. But he looked at me and sort of gave me a thumbs up. It's getting better. It's like... but like, he literally came in, and the first thing he did, he sort of stood in front of the microphone. We're all lining the cameras up, and he goes, sorry about my face. That's the first thing he said. But it's funny. But that eye for Molly looked very, very nasty. I just hope that there's no lasting damage there. I'm a bit funny with eye injuries. They just sort of set me off a little bit. So yeah, it looked bad. Fingers crossed, everything's good. It's just swelling. It will go down, and you know, Molly will be back in there again sooner rather than later.
The night started out with Mike Grundy picking up a TKO win over at Nad Narimani. Mike Grundy looked good as well, making his UFC debut. The teammate of Darren Till, so they bookended the evening, one victorious, one not, one suffering the defeat. But I thought this was a good win for Mike Grundy. I think he showed I'm deserving of being here.
Nad Narimani is a real gritty scrapper of a fighter. He doesn't get beat easily at all. You know, he came in and beat Paddy Pimblett convincingly to win the Cage Warriors featherweight title. And this was when Paddy was tearing through people in Cage Warriors and looking like he was going to be the next star to progress up to the UFC. And Nad just handled him in that fight. So we know that Nad, and since Nad's been in the UFC, he trains with Team Alpha Male. And he's solid everywhere, you know. He's got decent enough striking. He's got a strong wrestling base, and he's just tough and scrappy. He's not very easy to beat. Grundy went in there, and I thought he looked absolutely superb for a guy making his UFC debut. And he's been around the world. He's fought all over the place. He's a former wrestler in the Commonwealth Games. He's a bronze medalist in the Commonwealth Games. So he knows what it's like to perform on a big stage. But the UFC, and he told us backstage, you know, this was a completely different ball game altogether. But he looked like a man who'd fought sort of half a dozen times in the UFC before. Completely nerveless, got in there, and the thing that impressed me the most, because he got rocked in that fight as well. Narimani caught him, I think it was a head kick, And Grundy was a little bit wobbly for a while, recovered well. But the thing that really, really struck me, and it's the sign of a fighter who's got his senses about him and he's not prone to rushes of blood to the head. And because it was his debut, made it even more impressive. When he rocked Narimani, he didn't just bulldoze his way in.
Right.
So often, especially with young fighters or fighters who are making their UFC debut, they get their opportunity, they see their opponents rocked, and they smother their own work. They close the gap far too quickly, and then they can't get their shots off. But they get tied up, or they're just not in a position to follow up their shots. Grundy didn't do that. He dinged him, had him in trouble, and he just stalked him to the point where, okay, I can land another good shot. He was picking his shot soup, barely any wasted punches. And then the more, he just landed more and more, and then up the tempo, up the intensity, and got the stoppage. Super, super impressed with Mike Grundy. And this is a guy who, I know Darren has been campaigning for him to be in the UFC for a long time. And for him to go in there and put on a performance like that on day one was superb. And I'm slightly disappointed for him that he didn't get a bonus, because I thought that was, as an overall performance, that was one of the outstanding performances of the night for me.
Yeah, it really was. All right, well, listen, UFC on ESPN Plus 5, it was the 11th event in London. The 11th UFC event, I guess I should say, in London. It was the biggest gate they've ever done, is what I was told behind the scenes, of $2.4 million U.S. dollars. So it was a good crowd. Always loud, always knowledgeable. A little bit up and down on the night. You know, we had a run of decisions. We had three split decisions on the main card. So it was a little up and down, but certainly ended in exciting fashion with Masvidal, and then bizarre fashion afterwards with Masvidal and Edwards. So, listen, it's late. We should probably get to sleep. It's like 4:30 in the morning, and I got a plane to catch back home tomorrow. So got to get packed up and get to the airport.
Sounds like a plan.
Other than that, you guys enjoy the night. Thanks for listening.